my view on price is that price follows product, essentially. And so if the DAO and team are doing what it, and it doesn't necessarily like closely follow product either. Like, and there can be extreme amounts of lag between product and price. And I just don't know that like getting too hung up on price is the way. Like, I love seeing the debates and other aspects of the DAO is what I would say, not so much about price.
Yeah, I think to your point, like, I think there's a lot of really strong ideas that are contributed and important ones. But yeah, I think it's that discussion of trade-offs. And yeah, I mean, I think you're framing around kind of short-termism versus long-termism being pretty key here. And I guess what I'm getting at is, what is the difference, right? What's the practical difference when you're talking short-term versus long-term? How does this play out over time? Because I think, again, these ideas are important, but the timing is the question. Is this the right moment to be drilling down and emphasizing this one particular thing? And that's that discussion of trade-offs that I think is important here. I'll just take all in my chip too. I think we're just chatting a bit about, though, there's Sunny Birds at you as well. Just chatting a bit about some of the discussion and the Price Talk channel and having conversations that are productive. I think, especially when things start to get adversarial or feel adversarial, it's a good time to have. To open up a voice chat, if not a face-to-face call, because I think it's a way to keep things more civil and have more of a dynamic back and forth to find alignment and common ground, and which I think is important again for to that point of discussing trade-offs.
Yeah, I agree. I think having conversations helps add a tone that maybe is lost sometimes in back and forth messaging in the Discord. Thank you for inviting us to the town hall today. And yeah, I just came in a little late, so I'll just catch up.
Yeah, miss much. I think it was just talking about where we're at in these conversations. I think sentiment gets pretty negative. And I was saying that I've seen a fragmentation of the community as well. Like, I've gotten a lot of feedback that from people who have been in the Discord or check out the Discord. And we have 250, 300 voters a week. And I'm regularly meeting people who I'm like, you're a voter? Like, why aren't you in the Discord? And they're like, ah, too negative. And so I've seen a fragmentation of the community outside of the Discord. And sometimes people go into other discussions, whether it's a Telegram group or DMs, or they just don't participate in that discussion. And what this is actually practically like a practical response that I think is actually trying to bring more of the discussion to the app. You know, think like those write-ups you've been doing for the mints, I think are awesome. And like bringing those in app, right? So by default, if you're voting, you're in the app. Right. So everybody sees that. And so bringing more of the comments to their focus on the art and making that visible so that they don't get stuck in the bubble here in Discord. And some of it's, you know, reaching people where they are. I think I don't, I'm not, ex I've been thinking about how do we refresh things in the DAO, in the Discord in particular. Do we just respond with going more to where people are? I think going into the app is one main thing to do there. And certainly growth is a big piece of it in continuing to, you know, keep fresh voices, people who have energy to give. I think a big thing is, at least for this conversation, is in part keeping things civil and having these conversations where we can discuss trade-offs and it doesn't feel so heavy. And that's why we actually, that's the original reason we started the town hall was for that. You know, attendance was what hasn't been great. So it turned in mostly to like monologue updates and with some occasional discussion, but it seemed like the right time given the talk in the Price channel was very recent. And so made some direct invites.
Yeah, I think, you know, reading the discussion recently and just seeing some of the debate about what is Botto and, you know, 3 years into this project, I think some people will see it strictly as like an AI artist. Some see it as a combination of things. And I mean, I feel like from a narrative perspective, and like the social footprint, I think it would be helpful if we want the DAO and the participants in this project to be as broad of a user base as possible to consider the idea that Botto may be all these things, or maybe some of these things more than other things to different users, and that's okay. Like how Ethereum for some users is just DeFi, whereas we know that's not the case. Like we all know that Ethereum is much more than DeFi, but for some users, that's what it is. And that's cool. That's fine. But I think that's where I feel like we're self-limiting the potential growth of the user base if we strictly say, okay, Botto is just an AI artist and that's all it is and that's all it ever will be. If we don't also consider like the fact that, yes, that's the biggest part of what Botto is, but there's also the fact that there's a community that's built around a currency that's also built around this DAO. And I was just reflecting on that from reading some of Mario's recent comments about the about what Bado is and his from his perspective. Yeah. So when I saw that, I was like, that's cool. Like, to me, I mean, I don't see it as a like a religion per se, but like when he described it as that, it to me, it was like, oh, okay, that's exactly what like me and some others have been saying for a long time now. It's like, it can be all these things to different, it can be all these things. It can be some of these things. That's fine. Just a question of like conveying that message.
Yeah. And I'm with you. One of my favorite things about Bado is like almost every meta, you can find a fit for Bado, whether there's a DeFi aspect, AI crypto aspect, consumer crypto aspect, right? Is it just, it's just fun to participate. We have lots of people who just like to participate. It's not really a financial thing so much. There is obviously the financial component, game aspect. Are you making a game out of this? There's larger themes around AI governance. Obviously just like agency, like there's a lot of AI innovation. And I think it's a double-edged sword, right? So it's a very rich, multidimensional, multifaceted project that a lot of people can find identity in from different perspectives. That's huge. It's really important. I think the other side of that is that if people come in and are wanting to prioritize certain things, and obviously there's a lot of things to address, but those are compounding experiments and really emphasizing the fact that these are experiments. This experiment in automated creativity, this experiment in community governance, this experiment in decentralized infrastructure, these are compounding complexities that if we tried to address all of them, you've brought up budget. What does this need to function? If we tried to address all of them, I think we would either need a lot more budget or we would force some things that might break the project. And this is where I think we start talking about needing to prioritize and needing to consider those trade-offs. And I think more important, where I would say that really comes to a head is, at the end of the day, what is this a means to an end to, right? These different components are a means to an end of creating an autonomous artist. And what that allows us to do is to create focus among those multitudes. When we talk about having a fully decentralized protocol, this isn't a transactions protocol, right? It includes aspects of transactions. But I would say it is more so a social and cultural protocol. It's an art protocol. And in order to decentralize that and get, again, given it's experimental, we have to discover a few things. One, what is the mission? And I think we have some pretty good ideas of that. Again, this being an autonomous artist. Part of that is also understanding what is not the mission. What is ultimately out of scope that if we try and pursue these things, it will take us off course. So we have that primary mission. And then what is needed to execute on that mission? And that's where a lot of the uncertainty is. When we look at the evolving technology of AI, the evolving infrastructure of Bado, I think the large language model project is a really good example here. I think it's a very powerful thing to create a voice for Bado. That project is a novel AI governance experiment. It's a hybrid, more or less, of two approaches to AI governance that have been experimented with only a couple times by multi-billion dollar companies, Anthropic and OpenAI. And we're a protocol with a very small team. It's feasible, but we're exploring novel territory here that I think is extremely powerful for Bado, for Bado's success, for Bado's ability to continue to wow people and create significant cultural impact. And I think trying to pursue some of the aspects of like full decentralization of all components right away would make that impossible. And it might even break it because of the need to try and update things. And then the decision-making structure just can't accommodate it and it can't be updated and it slowly dies. And so in general, I think like we're all trying to move in that direction of greater decentralization over time, but doing it in a way that, again, to set it up of the mission, really clarifying and sharpening that mission, what is needed to execute on that. And I've been working on a document of what would a skeleton crew look like for Bado. I think that's an interesting thing to continue to look at and look at what the additional tasks are that we're doing as contributors that add on top of that, that I think help drive growth, help increase Bado's chances of success. And then there's this question of how do you do this in a decentralized way that doesn't add that doesn't overburden the system with bureaucracy and rigidity that end up killing it. And I think on one end, we actually have a very good example of what is clear value add, which is that decentralized training. And that's been it from day zero. That's been really clear. In the documentation, you know, this training will be decentralized. Then there was this other part of like community governance will kick in 6 months. And there's this very wide spectrum of expectations of what that looks like and should look like. I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm saying that it's a very challenging conversation of trade-offs that, again, I'm glad you guys are here and I'm glad we're able to talk about this.
Yeah, and to be frank with you, I didn't know the extent of this initiative, the train model, relative to, as you mentioned, some of these much larger players in the AI field that have much more resources to delve into this. So to me, that's a significant undertaking and it should be underscored, you know, and I feel like that's where I do recognize that you and Mario and you guys are doing good work. I see your videos on YouTube, like you're at events, you're speaking. It's just, I have to search for them myself. That's where I'm like, I wish it was like it was just one-stop shop. It was all there on the Botto's like YouTube channel. That's where it becomes like a question of discoverability, right? We can be doing great work, but if people aren't aware of it, then it doesn't shine a light on that great work. And so that, for me, I think my frustration is not so much the fact that great work isn't being done. It's that I want that work to be like clearly distinguished and discoverable for people. That would be my kind of constructive feedback. And then, you know, I'm not an AI expert. I can't comment on all these things, but one of the things I can definitely comment on is just having been a part of DeFi and crypto and DAOs for years now. One of the things about, from what I see, this is why I've been focused more so on how do you grow the user base and questions about liquidity and how liquidity ties into potential community growth. A lot of people have been rugged in projects. Let's be real. This is where I think one of the things, I think people still scratch their heads, like, why have meme coins taken off? I think, to be frank with you, I think meme coins have taken off because people got sick of rug pulls. So when these coins just start coming up and people are like, oh, we totally locked our liquidity. We're never going to rug pull you. That in and of itself is a product market fit because people have been rug pulled how many DeFi exploits have we been seeing over the past, God knows how many years now? So billions have been lost. And when people see the project team tells you, we're not going to ever pull this liquidity, that in and of itself is like, that's like a great, you know what I mean? Wow, I can actually trade in and out of this token. And I know that the liquidity, at least the underlying baseline liquidity will never be pulled. That builds community. Like, that's where I think, I was actually thinking of writing a blog post on the meme coins. Why is that has happened? I think there's an element, don't get me wrong, I think there's an element of speculation and just degeneracy, don't get me wrong. But I think there's also just that psychological, people are tired of being told one thing and not getting it. And so when people see like, at least there's some objective anchored value that they know is going to be there.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like also on the question of decentralization and reducing bureaucracy, that's where my recent idea about splitting the protocol on liquidity in terms of how we manage it, the proposal I put together just for everybody's awareness, I think it's a very reasonable approach. You talked about experimenting, Simon. That's what it is. It's an experiment. I don't know if it'll grow the community, but the proposal essentially is, at least for the first year, that it would be applicable if it were to be voted on and approved by the DAO, it would be by the end of that first year to permanently lock 35% of the protocol and liquidity in a Uniswap V3 pool using a UNCX locker. And it's an experiment. The experiment is, would this initiative potentially grow the community and attract maybe more DeFi-oriented users to an AI artist and potentially spur their interest in art and NFTs and by extension grow the number of people that are voting every week on Botto's art and that type of thing. I feel like there's a question of like governance surface, right? I think I cited an article, MIT actually posted an article about DAOs and it's referenced in my proposal under the governance surface hyperlink. If you guys get a chance to take a look at it, MIT, it's a really interesting, it's not even an article, it's like a paper on DAOs and decentralization. And the question of governance surface is a question that I think many DAOs are wrestling with. Like, where is the ideal? Do you want to govern everything or are we going to set boundaries on what is governable within the DAO? And I think there's this sweet spot where you want to have you don't want to have too big of a governance surface, but you also don't want to have too small of a governance surface. So there's this sweet spot. And I think overarching path forward for Botto and this DAO is, what is the governance surface? Yeah. We know for a fact it's training the AI. That's a weekly, that's a given, right? But beyond that, what are there some things we can carve away? Can we relinquish some control? And in doing so, would that potentially attract more people? So These are just questions I still have. And I think not just for this DAO, I think many DAOs are wrestling with. So
yeah,
that's all I have to say.
A lot of really good stuff. And I took a couple notes because I think there's a lot of stuff I'd like to address and respond to. So one of the first things you were saying was like, okay, wow, there's a lot of good stuff, but why is it so hard to find? And that communication aspect. And I want to point out that first, when you and others point out things of, hey, there's a deficit of, we're missing something here. Like, we hear you. Like, I read everything and I tend to agree with all of like, yeah, we could be doing better here. And if you look at it as a startup, like it's just, there's a lot of trial and error of figuring things out, of figuring out the operations, of figuring out team processes, roles to deliver on those things. And stuff gets missed through the cracks, and communication is a big piece, right? There's a lot of stuff happening. How do we make sure people can see it? And some of this problem does go back to the fact that there's a lot of pieces happening and a lot of audiences to talk to. It's not an easy thing to crack. And I'll highlight Lauren, who joined the team, only 2 months ago, to really lead our communications. And that is a huge lift. And the first step has really been to get our baseline across all channels up to speed. Greg, who's here, has been doing regular write-ups and of our periods of updates that we send out. But the distribution, right? And so really taking a look at all of our channels and ensuring that we're getting the most out of them without also overloading them. We share all the information in here, but I keep asking myself, like, how could we be doing this in a different way such that it gets through? Because when I have one-on-one conversations or direct conversations with people at meetups or wherever, or even in this chat, I share information that I have shared in this Discord, but like, it clicks, right? And I'd shared that material I've discussed a number of times, the novel and heavy approach of this large language model. So finding that time and place and bandwidth is a real challenge, but it's something we're making a lot of effort to address. I think like something related to that is product, right? A lot of invisible work has been happening there. And the context to know is like the code base of the original site was pretty wonky. When we got big spikes in traffic, it broke. When we would do iterations on features, it would break. There were these real issues with that code base that made it actually really hard to iterate. So it looked necessary. And again, we talked about this, but I don't think it's always landed that it was really necessary to refactor the code base and so that we could iterate. And we did that big UX study. We incorporated a lot of that feedback. We went with this scrolling feature because based off of behavior we saw and direct feedback we got. And at launch, we put out something that in effect reset a lot of what we had built because we wanted to get something out. It did take a long time, longer than we wanted. It's a small team. I think they had a massive amount of delivery for their size. And they're iterating very fast to get those features, to rebuild those features that make this really rich, ritualistic, fun experience with training Botto. And I think that part of what I see is a lot of complaints and negativity around why don't we have these things? And I think a lot of that goes back to, well, we've just had to rebuild the code base to be able to ship those features that are more visible. And that discussion and that communication, I think, is, again, I don't think we've done the best job of reporting. I think we've made a lot of serious improvements on that. But I think that's a factor. And I think we'll see a lot of improvement there to help push growth. On the locked liquidity, I think a few things. One, we've been super focused on improving on the new product, on the Sotheby's, which is literally like next week, on revamping our strategy and budget, on P5, on the large language model. So that's drawn a lot of our attention. I do want to acknowledge, I think liquidity is super important. I look to that time when the incentives stop. What happens to liquidity then? Are we going to be in a healthy position? I think one of the things that's been hard is when I start, personally, when I start looking at the liquidity challenge or question, I see a lot of possible approaches. And I totally hear you on locking liquidity to make it more attractive as like a speculative bet. I think that's essentially what we're talking about here, is making a speculative bet where you're not going to get rugged. At the same time, does that reduce optionality for the protocol down the road? And trying to find that right balance and right approach, and to get into that conversation of governance surface, in general, I think there's a lot of really big questions about what do you lock in to improve that decentralization, to improve that trustlessness? And I think those are hard questions. And they are questions that take time to consider. And when we look at our priorities of, okay, we have big art projects to deliver on, big upgrades of Botto to deliver on, we can't ignore liquidity. We cannot. But when we look at the priorities and try and balance out where we're putting our attention right now, sometimes I think we're going to really prioritize a lot of the art and the product. And because that's a really big question of how do we approach the liquidity lock-in question and make sure that if we do lock something in, we have a very long-term view of how this looks, and maybe we add to that lock liquidity over time. So it's not for lack of caring so much as really to that question of governance surface. And I think the other side of it is, and I think this is hard to see because a lot of people are not participating so much in the Discord because they don't want to participate in what have become more adversarial discussions. But there is a lot of trust. And I think that's actually really core to community is trust, not necessarily trustlessness. And we're able to build this out with a lot of different input. And so far, I think a lot of consensus. And as a team, I think we've shown serious dedication to building that consensus. Like you can look at the token holders, like it would not be hard to force things through without any discussion, to veto things. Like we actively avoid that. We actively really try and build that consensus because that's where we want to push for the long term, to in terms of the long term structure of this. It is something where it's not just based on trust, but it is just the infrastructure is set up to that. And yeah, I hear you on reducing that governance surface, and I think introducing more trustlessness. I think the flip side of that is also what are the contributors trusted to do? That's another way of addressing the governance surface. What are the contributors trusted to do? Because we can't do everything by committee. That would slow things down, and I think just break. That's, I think, where we're at right now on a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff that is unclear, undetermined, that needs to be figured out, and to trust people to take that input and to bring it together and to come up with solutions. And again, this is with consensus and building that consensus of the team. And I think sometimes considering, okay, we're going to leave alone certain things because trying to figure all these things out right now by committee is heavy and hard to get to a good answer by committee. I covered a lot there. Oh, Sunnybird. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, I was just, in your response, I hear a lot of we as a team. So the question is, where does the boundary of we? Is Sync's contribution not part of we or us? So how do you, I think in that response, this is not very, it's a bit ambiguous because it creates a boundary that is reflected in the chat in the Discord, that there is some the team and then there's other people. But how do you become one contributor essentially in your eyes, if not? So how do you say that whatever Sync says or other people say is not part of us?
I think that's a good question. I'm responding to what I read as, hey, I've put up this proposal. Why am I not getting more feedback on it? And the people I talk to and work with every day, paid contributors on the team, that like we had this budget, we can hire people for that budget. That's what I mean by we in terms of when we're being asked for feedback on different things, and people whose job it is to consolidate a lot of different points of view and input. I think you point out something really important here, which is there's also this kind of in-between space, right? And we've been making a real concerted effort to bring on what we would call more decentralized contributions, like what Sync is doing, where they're not necessarily a contracted contributor, but they're free to contribute. They can build these proposals and they can be compensated for that effort in a more, how do I put it? Decentralized is such a broad term, but we set up a, what's it called? Governance incentives. And yeah, I think this is, there's certainly a we, but there's also, I think, a lot of in between. And that's part of the progressive decentralization is being able to expand the different kinds of contributors.
So that's an important aspect.
Am I starting to answer your question there? Or?
Yeah, the point I'm trying to hint at is that the in-between, what you call in-between space, is an important space. And I don't necessarily think that Sync just posted this for feedback. Often when we share things, we post them for action. Of course, feedback is important, but so this in-between space is actually what you want to measure. How many these initiatives are actually raised? How many are implemented? How do you, you mentioned earlier that you have 200 weekly votes. Okay, so those are all KPIs that actually show the health of an organization that are like quite transparent. And so those are the things that I personally seek to, first of all, know how they are, but also to improve. So yeah, if you don't have capacity to look at certain aspects, voila, there is this in-between space to actually do stuff. But right now, there is not necessarily the empowerment to actually implement stuff or to work towards implementation, because then there is, again, the boundary between we and what can other people do besides just raising things. So if there are things available to actually lead from idea to implementation, because that's what you ultimately want to achieve. At least I would suggest that's helpful to achieve.
Yeah. And I think part of what you're touching on is that governance surface question in a way, right? So if we say, hey, we're going to open up certain things to more governance, to more of that in between, or let's say decentralized contributions, that's in a way expanding that explicit governance surface area. I think right now, actually, it's not explicit at all. It's wide open, which is partly why I think we can have very broad ranging and dense and often chaotic conversations about what to do. And I think that might be something worth making more explicit, is saying, hey, this stuff falls within the hired contributors. And then here's some areas that we want to see more push on. I think that, yeah, I guess what's hard to control for is when there's also just a lot of heavy disagreement about proposals. And I'm not even talking about the we or the contributors, but just within the community of people who participate in governance, in the discussions. And I think that as a general note, going back to just the tenor of these conversations, I think it's very important to by all parties, really make the effort to come at this with a level of civility, of open-mindedness, and really trying to avoid the more adversarial debates. Because the road that takes us down is, frankly, the person who's willing to sit on the keyboard longer. And I don't think that's a good outcome. I've given reference to people who I know who are paying attention, who vote regularly, who are involved in some areas, but they just like, yeah, I don't touch Discord anymore. It's too much.
But that's an important thing. So that's all, I think that's all pretty much agreed. So then the only question is, when I also hear about the long term, it's all okay. I don't know about it, so I'm not going to comment on it. But I comment on the interactivity in the Discord as such. And of course, now saying that a few people don't touch it anymore, but actually because of the adversity, or like how adverse it was, but actually interaction has declined. So has declined in general, which has led to discussions about the health in the organization. So the cause is actually that the inflow of the engagement has just declined in general. So how do we address that practically speaking? And so how do we, so what is a practical solution to increasing the number of weekly votes or such things that are actionable?
Yeah, look, I think this is, again, part of the nature of having these kinds of open forums is you get some really strong reactivity. Oh, price is down. Oh, people are down. And I'm not denying whatsoever that like we have work to do on growth. Like we all have work to do. But like some of the comments we see is, oh, the team doesn't care about token price. Oh, the team doesn't care about growth. It's like we work on this stuff really hard every day. And we may disagree about things, but those are disagreements about trade-offs. And when the conversation becomes, and look, it's, you see this across Web3. This is part of this whole thing of like community governance, which frankly isn't really community. It's a lot of people who are pissed about stuff just whining, right? That's not a conversation. And so
I agree. But those are stupid comments. So this is just stupidity. I get it. It's useful. But let's say practically speaking, let's ignoring this stupid comment. Like that is not like, what's the growth? Like, how do we intend to increase the interaction? Or what are like practical, like how do we even measure okay, we have 250 weekly voters. How did this improve or decrease in the last? What is the cause and how do we make sure that this is better, practically speaking?
Totally. And this is something that I was just talking with Chuby about today. We've talked a lot about what do we need for community management? What's really the thing? And I think a lot of it's reporting. How do we make that, those numbers and those, allow that conversation to be informed and active and so that people can see that and have that conversation? So that, I think that's a big part of it. At the same time, we do make great effort to share that thinking and to update folks on where we're at with it. I would go back again to the product has been, I think, a real challenge because it's stagnated while we've been building a new code base. And so we're here, like I'll tell you what we're working on there and what our thinking is. And this has taken all of the feedback we've gotten directly, indirectly, all that. One, refactoring the code base was important because there's a lot of what we call quality of life features. Oh, I'd like to see, you know, my favorites. And this is actually goes directly to the point you're talking about, like how can I track progress? You know, creating a data room where I can actually get good insights and track what's the health of the protocol. One of the things that we wrote about this in the strategy last year, and you know, again, a lot of these things have required a new product, a new code base to build, is for a user to be able to really directly see their impact on Botto. I don't just vote, but I can see what's my progression of voting like. Maybe I can see the kinds of aesthetics I've tended to vote for. Do I have a ranking? Can I see how I compare to others? And those are part and parcel with also understanding more broadly how is Botto doing, not just with my inputs, but across the community inputs. And I started to even talk about, are we building sort of a game? And I don't mean a game of a 3D world you're running around in, but this is a governance process. And that can be laborious, maybe even boring, heavy. We want to make something that is fun and rewarding. And part of that is being able to see your impact and to also create different kinds of impacts, right? Can we give natural language feedback and comments? We had an experiment with that with P5.js. And so the work is to bring all of this into the core app. And first create a really amazing single player experience. I come in, I get to participate. I see inside the machine, I'm a part of the machine, you know, roughly speaking, right? And then we can start to introduce more multiplayer components, right? When I can see other people's comments, I can bring in that collective meeting making discussion into the app directly in there. Or I have favorites. I've curated a bunch of works that I think are real gems. I often think of like this example conversation of, yeah, Botto produces a lot of crap, huh? It's like, actually, there's some really amazing gems. If you look here, check out my favorites folder or check out this work that I think really should win. And we need to make that as shareable as possible to help with that word of mouth of growth. And that's really at the core experience. On you would say maybe top of funnel experience, we bridge some liquidity to base in part to make that top of funnel as broad as possible. There's still a lot of activation to do there. And so some of this is bringing the experience to where people are. We had that one thing with that experiment that we did not expect the level of success of the frame on Farcaster to get 12,000 people in a couple of days. And for reference, like Botto's had around 5,000 token holders voters. And in 2 days, or 12,000 individual wallets voting through a Farcaster frame. We weren't ready for that. I think, again, the app wasn't really ready for that. But starting to try different activations like that with a better ability to convert down the pipeline. And can we create voting bots in Telegram groups? There was a great suggestion in general chat just this morning or yesterday about the art tab product. You can bring more visibility to Botto. Could you even bring the voting experience to your Chrome extension, where you every time you open up Chrome, you just get the voting interface, you can vote. So yeah, like I feel everyone's frustration on what are we doing for growth, but it's also been predicated on getting that new app out so that it can handle growth, so that we can iterate on that, and so that we can really build for a much bigger user base and more diversified user base. The last other thing I'll mention is account abstraction, right? Crypto is a very powerful demographic, but it's also limited. How can we expand people and even enable Botto, make it so that people can onboard themselves into crypto through Botto by making this onboarding experience as smooth and easy as possible? So we've really built a lot of these kind of base infrastructure, this foundation that we can then, and by base, I don't mean the chain, but like just foundation, that we can start really building out the top of funnel and have a very powerful conversion down the pipeline.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on the topic of discoverability and app. So one of the things initiated baseline VP, and that's directly linked to, that's anchored to actual value, that's anchored to the protocol and liquidity. And it enables every account to have 100 VP per round. How can we broadcast that in a more discoverable manner? Like, it would be cool, for example, on the app, if we had interface that showed like, okay, we have this amount of protocol and liquidity. This equates to X number of users being able to benefit from 100 VP per week. And then potentially like having maybe like a tracker where it's like a live tracker. Oh, this amount of VP corresponding to baseline VP has been used. So eventually if Botto hits the mainstream, you could actually potentially see a situation, at least for me, in the most optimistic outlook, is every week, like even people that just don't even have any access to Ethereum or have no anchored value to the chain, or some grandma or grandpa that just wants to participate in this, they'll be rushing to their phone or their desktop to vote, to participate. And they know they can because they know there's value there that they can interact with. And to me, that's like a positive feedback loop. And that also ties into my proposal about locking liquidity, because the idea with, if you lock some of the liquidity in perpetuity, that would enable this baseline VP to continue as like a continuous feature of this project, irrespective of what happens in the future, at least with some portion of value anchored. So I just wanted to throw that out there on the topic of like discoverability. Like, some of these features we're building into this protocol are cool, but going to the app, and I think like new app does highlight the 100 VP. Don't get me wrong. It pops up and it tells you that. But there was a page that like had a, on your, like the gamification aspect, Simon, that you keep bringing up, like that to me is one way to reinforce that potentially. It's like,
yeah,
how much baseline VP is actually available for use? How many users does that equate to? And maybe you start seeing like a rush of people coming in just to participate, just to be able to say, hey, I was one of the 10,000 users that was eligible to use up this baseline VP. And I got to participate in training this really cool AI artist that was the first decentralized AI artist in the world in human history, right? That's where I feel like, that's where I see like these ideas, they may seem, for example, like protocol and liquidity that I proposed, it may seem like it's just tied to liquidity. But in actuality, there's actual potential positive feedback loops that reinforce other elements of the protocol that are maybe not as necessarily highlighted or known as they should be.
Yeah.
So that's all I want to say. And also, I just want to give you a shout out because I saw your post about like you attended to the Coinbase Ventures, I think, summit or event that was an invite only thing for a handful of people. And you went out there and that was like a leadership initiative. I want to give you a credit for that, for sharing that. Like from a discoverability perspective, just like positive constructive feedback. Like, I only learned about that because I'm closely following the Discord, and I think you posted it under one of the threads. But that's where I feel like if you had posted like an announcement post, hey guys, and it could be part of some other updates that you guys are regularly working on. So that's all. Hopefully that gives you some idea of what I was talking about.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm going to wrap up real quick, because I do have to jump, but just a couple things. Is like, one, I was just talking with Lauren about this, of like prioritizing our comms onto the app and the docs first, because again, we've prioritized a lot in Discord, but we've realized like it's pretty fragmented. Like, a lot of people are not necessarily in Discord, and making that discoverability, really going to the root, the main, like, where is the single source of truth? And that really needs to be in app. And I think that's something that we haven't done great on, but I think we're really going to change, is really improving it so that it's super visible to everybody, as well as blasting out across channels. So like, totally heard on that. The thing I would ask from you is, you know, hopefully, you know, you guys feel heard, and that you guys see that we are working on addressing this. A lot of it's just, you know, patience too. Like, there's a lot we're doing. And we're trying to balance out, like, keeping you guys up to date and also just shipping it as much as we can. And I would ask for patience there, but we hear everything. And I'm thinking, could we also try and log feedback and suggestions in places to help it be clear that, yes, we registered this, we're going to address this. Yeah. And Sunnybird, just before I log off, because I do have to jump to the next thing, but did that start to answer some of your questions as well?
Oh, yeah. So I will write a small message and then it will become clear.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Great. Guys, this is a really great conversation. I think for me, this is what we've wanted out of town halls, and I hope we can have more town halls like this. I feel like we've been able to find a lot of good agreement.
Thanks, everyone.
Lauren, did you have something?
No, I think that was a beautiful last note.
Cool. Look, also, I just want, if anybody has any feedback on this conversation, how can we have more conversations like this to make it available? Encryptus, I saw you just showed up now. So how can we make this easier to access to make sure that we're using this time, not just for one-way monologues of updates, though maybe that's helpful. I've been able to, I feel like, give some good updates here, but based off of like top-level concerns and questions people have, yeah, any feedback on continuing what I think was a really good conversation here. So guys, thanks for coming. Talk soon.